Welcome back, listeners, to Sandman Stories Presents, a folklore podcast where I read you to sleep or until the next story. I'm your host, Dustin. Today we are back in Korea learning about a fire spirit that lives in a mountain. And also we learn about how the king finally got the fire imp to stop burning up the palace. Okay, let's begin. The Great Stone Fire Eater. Ages ago, there lived a great fire spirit inside of a mountain to the southwest of Seoul, the capital of Korea. He was always hungry, and his food was anything that would burn. He devoured trees, forests, dry grass, wood, and whatever he could get a hold of. When those were not within his reach, he ate stones and rocks. He enjoyed the flames, but threw the hard stuff out of his mouth in the form of lava. This fire monster spent most of his time in a huge volcano some distance away, but in sight of the capital. The city people used to watch the smoke coming out of the crater by day, and issuing in red fire between sunset and sunrise, until all the heavens seemed in flames. Then, they said, the fire spirit was lighting up his palace. On cloudy nights, the inside of the volcano glowed like a furnace. The molten mass inside the crater was reflected on the clouds, so that one could almost see into the monster's belly. But nothing tasted so good to the fire eater as things which men built, such as houses, stables, fences, and general property. And a special tidbit that he longed to swallow was the royal palace. Looking out of his crater one day, he saw the king's palace, all silver bright and brand new, rising in the city of Seoul. Thereupon he chuckled and said to himself, for he was very happy, "There's a feast for me. I'll just walk out of my mountain home and eat up that dainty morsel. I wonder how the king will like it." But the fire spirit was in no hurry. He felt sure of his meal, so he waited until his friend the South Wind was prepared to join him. "Let me know when you're ready and we'll have a splendid blaze," said the fire spirit to the South Wind. "We'll go up at night and enjoy a lively dance before they can get a drop of water on us. Don't let the rain clouds know anything about our picnic." The South Wind promised easily, for she was always glad to have a frolic. So when the sun went down and it was dark, the fire spirit climbed out of his rocky home in the volcano and strode towards Seoul. The South Wind pranced and capered with him until the streets of the capital were so gusty that no one with a wide-brimmed hat dared go outdoors, lest, in a lively puff, he might lose his headgear. As for the men in mourning, who wear straw hats a yardstick wide and as big and deep as washtubs, they locked themselves up at home and played checkers. By the time all the palace guards were asleep, the fire spirit was ready. He said to the South Wind, "Blow, blow your biggest blast as I begin to touch the roofs of the smaller houses. This will whet my appetite for the palace, and then together we'll eat them all up." Not till they heard a mighty roar and a crackling did the people of Seoul push back their paper windows to find out what was the matter. Oh, what a blaze! It seemed to mount to heaven with red tongues that licked the stars. Those who could see in the direction of the palace supposed that the sun had risen, but soon the crash of falling roofs and mighty columns of smoke and flame with clouds of sparks told the terrible story. By the time the sun did rise, there was nothing but a level waste of ashes where the larger buildings had been. Even the smoke had been driven away by the wind. When the king and his people in the palace enclosure, who had saved their lives by running fast, thought over their loss, they began to plan how to stop the fire monster, when he should take it into his head to saunter forth on another walk and gobble up the king's dwelling. A council of wise men was called to decide upon the question. Many long heads were bowed in hard thought over the matter. All the firemen, stonecutters, fortune tellers, dragon tamers, geomancers, and people skilled in preventing conflagrations were invited to give their advice about the best way to fight the hungry fire demon. After weeks spent in pondering the problem, they all agreed that a dragon from China should be brought over to Korea. If kept in a swamp and fed well, he would surely prevent the fire imp from rambling too near Seoul. Besides, the dragon would know how to amuse and persuade the South Wind not to join in the mischief. So, at tremendous cost and trouble, one of China's biggest dragons, capable of making rain and spouting tons of water on its enemies, was shipped over and kept in a swamp. It was honored with royal decoration, allowed to wear a string of amber beads over its ear, given a horsehair hat, a nobleman's girdle, and fed all the turnips it desired to eat. In every way, it was treated as the king's favorite. But it was all in vain. Money and favor were alike wasted. The petted dragon made it rain too often so that the land was soaked. Then, when told not to do this, it grew sulky and neglected its duty. Finally, it became fat and lazy, and one night fell asleep when it ought to have been on guard, for the winds were out on a dance. Seeing his jailer thus caught napping, the fire imp leaped out of its volcano prison, rode quickly on the south wind to Seoul, and in a few hours had again swallowed the royal palace. There was nothing seen the next day except for ashes, which the fire monster cared no more for than we for nutshells when kernels are eaten up. With big tears in their eyes, the king and his wise men met together again to decide on a new scheme to keep off the fire imp. They were ready to drown him or to see him get eaten up because he had twice swallowed up the palace. They sent the Chinese dragon home, and this time, besides the fortune tellers and the stone cutters, the well diggers were also invited. For many days, the wise men studied maps, talked about geography, looked up mountains, valleys, and the volcano, and studied air currents. Finally, one man, famous for his deep learning about wood and water, forests and rivers, spoke thus: "It is evident that the fire has always come from the southwest and up this valley," pointing to a map.
"True, true," shouted all the wise men.
"Well, right in his path, let us dig a big pond, a regular artificial lake, and very deep, into which the fire monster will tumble. This will put him out, and he can get no further."
"Agreed, agreed," shouted the wise men in chorus. "Why did we not think of this before?"
"True, true." All the skillful diggers of wells and ditches were summoned to the capital. With shovels and spades, they worked for weeks. Then they let in water from the river until the pond was full. So everybody in Seoul went to bed thinking that the king's palace was now surely safe. But the fire imp, seeing the dragon gone and his opportunity come, climbed out of his volcano and moved out for another meal. This time the south wind was busy elsewhere and could not go with him. So he went alone. But coming to the pond, tumbled and wet himself so badly that he was chilled and nearly put out when he got to the palace, which was only half burned. So he went home growling and hungry. Again the wise men were called, and the first thing they did was thank the boss well digger who made the pond. The king summoned him into his presence to confer rank upon him and his children. He was presented with 4 rolls of silk, 40 pounds of white ginseng, a tiger skin robe, 60 dried chestnuts, and 44 strings of copper cash. Loaded with such Korean wealth and honors, the man fell on his hands and knees and thanked His Majesty profusely. Then they called the master stonecutter, or chief of the guild, and asked him if he could chisel out a figure of a beast that could eat flames and be ugly enough to scare away the fire imp. The master had long hoped that he would be invited to rear this bit of sculpture, but hitherto the king and the court had feared it might cost too much. So the order was given, and out of the heart of the mountains, a mighty block of white granite was loosed and brought to Seoul on rollers, pushed and pulled and hoisted by thousands of laborers. Then, hidden behind canvas to keep the matter secret, lest the fire imp should find out, the workmen toiled. Hammers and chisels clinked, until on a certain day the great stone flame eater was ready to take his permanent seat in front of the palace gate as guardian of the royal buildings and treasures. The fire imp laughed when the south wind told him of what the Koreans in the capital were doing, even though she warned him of the danger of his being eaten up. "I shall walk out and see for myself anyhow," said the fire imp. One night he crept out quietly and moved towards the city. He nearly drowned in the pond, but plucking up courage, he went on until he was near the king's dwelling. Hearing the fire imp coming, the great flame eater turned his head and licked his chops in anticipation of swallowing the fire imp whole, as a toad does to a fly. But one sight of the hideous stone monster was enough for the fire imp. There before him, on a high pedestal, was something never before seen in heaven or on earth. It had enormous fireproof scales like a salamander, with curly hair like asbestos, and its mouth was full of big fangs. It was altogether hideous enough to give even a volcano spirit a chill. "Just think of those jaws snapping on me," said the fire imp to himself as he looked at them and the fangs. "I do believe that creature is half alligator and half water tortoise. I had better go home. No dinner this time." So, by his freezing glance alone, the great flame eater frightened away the fire imp, so that he never came again, and the royal palace was not once burnt. Today the ugly brute still keeps watch. You only have to look at him to enjoy this story. The end. Wow. I like how the fire imp was kind of playful. As far as I know, the only volcano in Korea currently is Hallasan on Jeju. I don't think we have any other volcanoes going on at the moment. But it's still a fun story, and I'm wondering what the stone eater looks like. I have to go find that. I'll go research that and look that up, but I'm really curious. It's not Heite, which looks kind of like that. It looks kind of a lion with curly hair thing. I'll have to go look it up.
Editor Dustin here. The stone creature is indeed Heite / Heichi, a stone lion with a horn on its head. It is said to protect buildings from fire and has roots in ancient China. It was placed at Gwangbuk Palace because the fire energy of Gwanak Mountain was strong. According to the Pungsu or Feng Shui, Heite is currently the mascot of Seoul. Now I know, and now you know.
Okay, and the podcast shout-out is to the Tales from the Enchanted Forest podcast. Come and join Fox and Sparrow as they cover folklore from around the world. If you like what I do, but want more conversation around the stories, The Enchanted Forest is the pod for you. Seriously, it's a good pod to listen to. You know what to do. Give a rating and review, and enjoy them as I do. And the listener shout-out is to Port-au-Prince, Haiti. The capital of Haiti was once the home of the nation of the Taino people until they were colonized by the Spanish. Then, due to raids and attacks by the French and the English, the Spanish moved out and the French came in to colonize. In 1804, the people of Haiti overthrew the local French government and became an independent nation, one of the wealthiest in the hemisphere, before France stuck them with a bill that was finally paid off in 2015. Yes, you heard that right. And the language I'm covering tonight is Haitian Creole. So shout out to my listener in Port-au-Prince. So here's my best attempt. Merci, un peu, un bonsoir. Thank you, and good night.